God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world as we remain mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. How much worry do you think God has put into this election in the United States? None, right? Of course, God doesn't worry. He can't worry. He can weep. Jesus wept. He can become frustrated with us, even angry with us. But does he worry? I don't believe that God could worry, because he knows how all things end. It would be like an author worrying about the outcome of one of his characters. What's going to happen to this character? Well, that's known to you. I mean, you could worry about the process of writing and how should I lay this out, but we're not fictional creatures. We're made in God's image. He's described us as his masterpiece. Male and female, he made us in his image. So I don't believe God can be surprised. In fact, the Bible tells us absolutely that God cannot be surprised. He has always existed, will always exist. He exists now, always has, always will. He knows all things. So I can't imagine that God has spent a microsecond worrying about the election. How about you? It's worrisome. We are electing someone to take care of our common business, business that would be inconvenient for us as a people to take care of on our own, but that's not the way this is presented to us anymore. The Mockingbird media and others present this to us as electing a near king, even as these kings become more and more figurehead-like. Kings and queens, in the case of figurehead-to-be, she thinks, Kamala Harris. So I don't believe God has spent 5 seconds on this, 1 second, a microsecond worrying about it. But how about us? And this is a gut check for me. I had a dream last night about finances. And God's blessed us. And I am thinking of making a pretty significant purchase. I'll tell you what it is. I'm thinking of buying the CrossFit gym, which I attend. And I'm a member. I'm a member. And I had dreams, financial dreams last night. People showing me pieces of paper and bills and invoices. And I did not sleep restfully. And I woke and there it was. God's still in charge. There it was. He's always provided. But that's the first dream I've had really worrying about business in a very long time. And you know what else? I've never had a dream worrying about a president. Have you? Now, I've had dreams worrying about work. When I worked at the Republican National Committee, I had dreams worrying about work because it was a horrible place. It was a backstabbing, front-stabbing, long knives, short knives place. Not a fun environment. So sometimes I had dreams about that that troubled me. But have you ever had a dream about the country? I haven't. Maybe that's to my deficit. So as we go through the news of the day, let's keep something in mind. I'm speaking really to myself. God knows exactly why he picked this time for you to live and for me to live. And incumbent upon us is to realize that because God chose this time for us to exist, he must have a reason for that, because God is not a God that does things on accident. Everything he does is intentional. You know, I've made the policy change from calling Kamala Harris Cammy, because I got some great biblical feedback from listeners and some very gracious notes from people saying, thank you for making that change. And another gentleman wrote to me and said, I'm really upset that you made that change. But the change is made. The new policy is she is figurehead Kamala Harris, because that's what she is. She's not someone who's going to go run the country. People will run it around her. And that's describing her role, her activities. So it does not run afoul of being disrespectful. Kamala Harris talked about being an attorney general of a border state.
I was attorney general of a border state. I went after the transnational gangs, the drug cartels, and human traffickers. I prosecuted them in case after case, and I won. We know our immigration system is broken, and we know what it takes to fix it. Comprehensive reform that includes strong border security and an earned pathway to citizenship.
So that was at a time when figurehead Kamala, when she was talking about going after the cartels, well, there's scant evidence that that was a focus for her, but let's give her this grace. That was also at a time where she laughed and cackled about putting in prison and, in jail, parents of truant kids. Many of them so-called minorities. I can't stand calling human beings minorities. So there was a time when it was convenient for figurehead Kamala Harris at that time, who got to call herself attorney general and acted like it, where she found it convenient to act that way. Let's also keep this in mind. She used the power of that office to break into the home of a filmmaker, Center for Medical Progress, to seize his computers, to ban and stop people from seeing footage of Planned Parenthood negotiating rates to sell baby parts and to do live intact DNAs of children, little babies, which is against federal law. So let's also remember that she was focused on that. Figurehead Kamala is in this position because of an internal coup, it seems. Even Joe Biden, this past weekend, Joe Biden said that his Democrat colleagues thought he would be a drag on the ticket. He finally admitted that. Now, whether he meant to admit that or not is debatable. He admitted it. There's also the reporting from Seymour Hersh, who's a longtime Washington, D.C. investigative reporter. He says it was Barack Obama who made the phone call to Joe Biden saying, Joe, you're out. You either leave or we use the 25th Amendment to force you out. But that would be forcing you out of the presidency. You can finish out your term, but you're done. There was an event that happened in Las Vegas around that period of time. You know, that's funny. That just stopped getting talked about. In an era of universal deceit, one should not be surprised that this didn't get any attention. Do you remember the medical emergency? You don't? No, there was a medical emergency with figurehead Biden in Las Vegas. You would think this would be a great big story. It wasn't. It was quickly put through the propaganda of silence machine. Propaganda of silence is my phrase. The Orwellian phrase is the memory hole after George Orwell, 1984. Luckily, there are people like Jennifer Van Laar. Jennifer is a writer at Red State, one of their most important contributors. She does a podcast there. A wonderful woman. And Jennifer Van Laar looked into getting the tapes of the 911 calls and the radio chatter about what was going on with figurehead Biden. So she got the radio traffic. This is part of what happened in Las Vegas. Again, this is the Las Vegas Police Department radio traffic the day the figurehead had a medical emergency in Las Vegas.
It's on channel if you didn't hear that. 678 says if you're not on a priority call, it's clear and be en route to 461 at UMC. Meet at the Valley ER parking lot.
Again, any available units, come down here to Valley Hospital right now.
678, copy. There's about four units coming to you right now.
678-759. Most of my guys are plain clothes. Can you use this or no?
As long as they are fully decked out and readily identifiable police gear.
All right, copy that. We'll be en route to you, brother.
Those were people, cops, talking about getting en route to a hospital because figurehead Biden was having a medical event. You would think this would be big news. And here's the LVPD chatter calling for available units to shut down all intersections between POTUS and the hospital. In other words, between the figurehead and the hospital, shut down traffic.
This is Frago on the POTUS movement. If you can monitor Event 8, Event 8 channel is where movement will occur.
I
Control 339 WC2. Yeah, I need everyone. We'll take all radio traffic regarding this over to event 8 channel, please.
Okay, units on blocking traffic on Eastern. Switch over to event 8 monitor there.
We're going to go ahead and lock that intersection now. I'm going back to event 8 to get further instructions.
Any units working this intersection closures, switch to event 8, just rebroadcasting.
697, yeah. For those units that are coming, just start going up and down Eastern. Look for an intersection that needs to be shut down, and then just shut it down.
Controller 5, just want to realize that we're working a supplier event on event 8.
That's affirmative.
You know, on channel, that's at Harmon and Eastern. Just plus those cars that are going southbound, east or west.
You know, on this channel, that's at Harmon and Eastern, advice.
If you're at a spot and you get cars stopped that are going north and south, just try to push them off east or west if you can.
This is traffic being stopped in a major American city expressly for figurehead Biden. This was a major medical event. They rushed him to the hospital, and now we have confirmation of this. The Las Vegas Police Department confirms that figurehead Biden was in the hospital being seen.
Okay, for everybody on the radio, right now, Fortis is 421. He's being seen, so we're just kind of waiting to see how this is shaping out. So for everybody's knowledge, he's 421 right now. We're just trying to figure out what's going on, and we're going to go from there.
421 being seen in the hospital. That should have been major news, because it came about just prior to what I suggest Seymour Hersh is right about, Barack Obama putting in the phone call to Joe Biden saying, Joe, you're done. So why did they choose Barack Obama? Because Barack Obama's always been the boss. I think Joe Biden to this day identifies him as the boss because Barack Obama runs the Democrat Party. Barack Obama runs many of the agencies, the three-letter agencies. He made sure of that when he left. He took political appointees and moved them into so-called civil service jobs. He left behind about 1,500 people who refused to carry out the orders of President Trump. His lawyers taught them how to do that. That you don't actually have to do what the president says. And yet all the talk about insurrection, well, that all happened on January 6th. Isn't God worries about this? No, he doesn't. I think God's incapable of worry because he knows how it all ends. So what's our role in this? Well, I think it is to recognize that we live in an era of universal deceit and to tell the truth. So what is the truth? Well, God is truth. His word is truth. Maybe that's one of the reasons we've been chosen for this time. We're being told by the Mockingbird media that the Harris campaign, it's all about joy. It's joy. Glenn Greenwald, great, great reporter, picked this up and gave us some examples. From NPR, Harris used to worry about laughing. Now, joy is fueling her campaign. Yeah, it's a joyful laugh, right? It's not. It's a cackling defensive laugh. This from the Washington Post. Herron and Walt seize on joyful message in contrast to darker Trump. This from a reporter at Vanity Fair on Twitter. Don't underestimate the power of joy. And that's about Harris and Walt. And this from MSNBC. The joy surrounding the Harris-Walt ticket. And you can continue on through the piece, example after example after example, where they've been clearly told to use the phrase joy. This is from The Atlantic. The Harris-Walt campaign's message of joy has extended to that most relatable of things, food. The Mockingbird media is taking marching orders from someone at the Harris campaign. We're about joy. Talk about joy. That's how they're describing figurehead Kamala and her defensive, sometimes offensive. I don't mean it's an offensive laugh and that it hurts one's feelings. It's an offensive tool to keep reporters from asking her serious questions. When she's confronted sometimes, as she was about the border, by a reporter from Charlie Kirk's organization, who's now a congresswoman, Congressman Luna, she laughed. It's not joy. It's a form of lying, because nothing's really funny. God isn't worried, and he chose you to live during this time, so let's not us worry. We'll come back on A Disciple's View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We're going to talk about COVID. And I know it's not in the news cycle, and so we're not supposed to talk about it, but AFR has an audience of one. That's God Almighty, and a family of many. That's you. And many people in this family, both in this immediate radio family, and the family of listeners have been affected by the medical interventions and the COVID shots. And I'm mindful of the criticism I've received from time to time asking me if I'm a scientist when I talk about these things. And we all are to some degree. Do I have a degree in science? No, I'm not a PhD, nothing like that. But all of us are scientists to a degree. Can I explain this? When you are engaging in observing your surroundings, you are constantly forming theses. So, for instance, you observe the traffic where you drive. And you can see coming up to an intersection, you know what? I think they've got that event today. That's different. We're gonna bail out. We're going to take this exit. You will, over time, begin to observe the patterns of traffic if you have to commute every day. And you can see that very, very late on, oh, gosh, I bet the I-5 is going to be really bad. Let's switch over to the 99. Now, that's not doing an experiment, but you're creating a thesis. And over time, you've been creating this thesis. You know what? When airport way's backed up, that usually means I-5 is bad. And over time, you start to kind of prove that thesis. That's very, very elemental, but there's some other things. You can see a shift in behaviors of people you know, and you can begin to form a thesis. You know what? I don't think my buddy is well. Now, this is, at best, soft science. But it is the elements of science to look at, hey, what are the changes in patterns? What might be causing this? Now, amp that up a bit. We can all use common sense when it comes to things related to big global events like the use of COVID to lock down the globe. We could all use it. Common sense, this. Can a mask protect you when you walk into a restaurant standing up and then be unneeded when you sit down? No, no one can believe that. No one can believe that the virus is too stupid to get to you where you're sitting. It can't be believed. Or that it doesn't float down and it only inhabits the upper part of the room. It cannot be believed. No one can believe it. The shots, the COVID shots, a common sense look at these would be this. We had the scientists, and there's no such thing as the scientists. We had some scientists telling us, the majority of them, the injection material stays at the site of the injection. No, it doesn't. No, that's gibberish. If you understand the function of these shots, it forced your genes to produce a poison, the spike protein. By producing the poison, your genes were distributing it throughout your body. That was a lie from the get-go. Common sense would tell us, if that's staying at the site of the injection, then it can't be hijacking our genes and forcing it to produce these spike proteins. All doctors knew this. All doctors understood if the genes are going to be producing this spike protein, it's not staying at the site. Everyone understood that. Common sense and observation around issues like this is our friend. God gave us skepticism. So why am I even talking about this? We've got an election to win. Well, those of us who are worried about such thing, I don't think God is. God might not. I mean, he's not worried. But I think God would take great offense if COVID shots caused the largest non-war mortality event in 100 years. And that's exactly what the correlation research in the public's interest claims. Excess mortality in 125 countries. Joseph Hickey, PhD, is one of the paper's co-authors. He's president of Correlation. He's just given a new interview with Defenders in Depth, where he discusses the bombshell findings in more detail. Hickey has warned that his study proved that COVID shots and lockdowns are responsible for the largest non-war mortality event in 100 years. And when he's talking about COVID shots and lockdowns, he's separating the two things. In the judgment of this paper and him, one of the lead authors, He believes that the pandemic-related restrictions, which were not at all related to a pandemic, there was never an actual pandemic. They had to change the rules to make it appear there was one, that the lockdowns and those measures killed 30 million people globally. How? Well, deaths of despair, forcing old people to be alone and not be able to touch human hands, not be able to see their kids, not letting married couples who were in their 80s be with each other in a hospital room, deaths of despair, refusal to treat diseases. Some people who were going through cancer treatments, your cancer's not an emergency, so we're not going to see you right now because the hospitals are overrun, which was never true. Some people had to stay home in that. Other people who were in AA or anti-addiction programs, they couldn't go. There were suicides, etc. And then, of course, lack of core medical care. Instead, abusing people. What do I mean? People coming into the hospital, presenting with COVID, but having a 98.9% oxygen rating in their blood and being vented. So the paper then makes the case that 17 million deaths can be directly attributed to the COVID mRNA injections. What they did, it's correlation, and I've read Reuters pretending to fact check this thing. It's not causation. They don't say it's causation. They look at a number of correlated factors, country by country, comparison by comparison, countries that did mass injections and countries that did not. And they can come back and look at the patterns. Wow, countries that did mass injections for the most part saw these deaths. And these deaths spiked, skyrocketed after the injections were introduced. There was no other large-scale change made to the health of the public in this time period. This is when the deaths really took off. The COVID lockdown scenario, same thing, lockdown, non-lockdown countries. So it's correlative, it's not causation, but we have causation in terms of how these things killed. We know about deaths of despair. It's a medical phrase. We know refusing to treat people's growing diseases can kill them. These are all things we know. These are knowable events. We're reading about this, or I am, because I refuse to let the news cycle move on into the next abuse of us. Because they do intend to have a next abuse of us. It's clear to me that the people who fancy themselves bosses of the world are going to use measures like this, lockdowns, in issues like, say, for instance, the weather. They've already talked about climate lockdowns. They're already testing 15-minute cities where you're not allowed to travel more than 15 minutes outside of your city. Or you have to stay within 15 minutes. So if you can walk around, great, but you don't get to take your car. And I can play for you videos of this being done to people in England. It is, then, great news. That's weird. What I just said is weird. No, it's great news. Because I believe, once again, the Lord is using times such as these to show people, particularly young people, you're living in an era of lies. This represents for us one of the greatest evangelical moments with absolute opportunity to go spread the seed of the gospel, because people have understood now that the system is a lie. That should be our entry point into saying God is not a lie. He can't. He is truth. This young woman used to be anti-Trump. She used to be anti-conservative. She used to be, well, all things sexual left. And then she had an awakening. She posted this on TikTok.
When I started researching history and I discovered the history of China and Mao Zedong, I wondered, why was this never taught to me in my public school? The reason is because the Department of Education was created to indoctrinate you. It was created by people who want to promise you equality in order to bring in communism. For that reason, they do not want you to know what Mao Zedong did. They're using all of the tactics that he used to control us. Mao's regime was responsible for the death of 40 to 80 million people. They lost their lives from starvation, labor camps, execution, because they lived under a totalitarian regime.
So she gets the history part, and she's correct. Of course, this is not taught in most American schools, but now she's able to apply it to our time. Praise God.
Until it ended them. Now, we're not at that point yet in the USA. Let's try and keep from getting there. Let me break some of them down for you. Mao gained control by pushing for collectivism. You could see that in the modern Democratic Party. Oh, you need to get this injection because everybody needs to do it to protect the safety of everybody. Oh, you need to stop driving your car so everybody can live on the planet. There's way more examples. Mao also used control and censorship. All of a sudden started hating Elon Musk when he bought X. But here's the part that's really interesting. Mao Zedong gained control by isolating women from their families.
Now think about this, what she's about to say. I think this is a very, very important illustration.
He used the feminist movement because he realized that he needed women to be a part of his revolution if he wanted it to work. You could see this clearly in the Democratic Party today.
Obviously. I mean, that part's obvious. So young people are beginning to wake up. And it is a thing for which we should praise God, but we can't just let it be an intellectual awakening. We need to go into these cycles where people are waking up and understanding that the government has lied to them and saying, yes, of course, and here are some reasons why. Go to them with the stories, the facts of the Bible. Did you know that God warned us against having bosses, kings? Did you know that? We had a king. He was God. Here's exactly what God said would happen, and it's come true. This is what God warned us about. An opportunity to go to them and say the entire world had an opportunity to be different, but we continued to choose. Oh, we want what everyone else has. This is such a time, an important time, for us to use the doubt and the well-earned doubt, the reasonable doubt, and it should be even more than doubt. It should be a conviction that the system is filled with lies and liars. Along with some very good people who are trying to keep their heads now, do their job. I really fail to recognize that sometimes. If you work in government and you hear me railing on about this, I want you to know I pause myself. I remember this. I picture my uncle who was a police officer, my mom who was a school teacher. I picture my nephew who works for the Social Security Administration. And I know them to be good people. I know that some of you are just keeping your heads down. You always wanted to work in government, civil service, and maybe even be a civil servant, as I bet a lot of you are. So please let me pause and thank you who are trying to be honest within government. I think that's very, very difficult. Rowan Atkinson is an actor, I think, best known from the Mr. Bean character. He's English. He's also a guy who's begun to see what is happening. He gave a very powerful speech about two tiers of justice in the UK. We'll talk about the UK more often. It's important to understand how fallen that country is and what a steep fall it's about to take. This is a speech, or part of it, Rowan Atkinson gave, using characteristic humor, but trying to describe a pretty dire circumstance in the UK.
My starting point when it comes to the consideration of any issue relating to free speech is my passionate belief that the second most precious thing in life is the right to express yourself freely. The most precious thing in life, I think, is food in your mouth. And the third most precious is a roof over your head. But a fixture for me in the number two slot is free expression, just below the need to sustain life itself. That is because I have enjoyed free expression in this country all my professional life, and fully expect to continue to do so. Personally, I suspect, highly unlikely to be arrested for whatever laws exist to contain free expression because of the undoubtedly privileged position that is afforded to those of a high public profile.
He's right. Very difficult to arrest a guy like this. They'd like to arrest J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter, for questioning gender ideology. They haven't yet. They threatened to, and she said, come and get me.
So my concerns are less for myself and more for those more vulnerable because of their lower profile. Like the man arrested in Oxford for calling a police horse gay. Or the teenager arrested for calling the Church of Scientology a cult. Or the cafe owner arrested for displaying passages from the Bible on a TV screen. When I heard of some of these more ludicrous offences and charges, I remembered that I had been here before in a fictional context. I once did a show called Not the 9 O'Clock News some years ago, and we did a sketch where Griff Rhys-Jones played Constable Savage, a manifestly racist police officer to whom I, as his station commander, is giving a dressing down for arresting a black man on a whole string of ridiculous, trumped up and ludicrous charges. The charges for which Constable Savage arrested Mr. Winston Kadogo of 55 Mercer Road were these: walking on the cracks in the pavement, walking in a loud shirt in a built-up area during the hours of darkness, and one of my favorites, walking around all over the place.
God's really blessed him with timing, hasn't he? And yet he's making a very, very important point. God, and he didn't say it, I think he's a secularist, God is pro-free speech. He's pro-accountability, too, but he's pro-free speech. You think God would want the Mockingbird media to hide the 17 million deaths that appear to be likely caused by the COVID shots, or the 30 million likely caused by the lockdowns and restrictions on care? Do you think God would want them to do that? He gave them voice. He gave them a privilege to earn the public trust by being trustworthy. I don't know that God spends much time thinking about the news, but I know he thinks about our souls. I wish more people in the Mockingbird media would think about theirs, as I think about mine. A lot. We'll come back on The Disciples View. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Thank you for being part of the AFR family. Got an audience of one, that's God Almighty, a family of many. Your monthly donations, recurring donations, allow us to talk about news with God at the center of it. And I'll share a scenario with you. There are people who have listened to my podcast. I do 2.5 hours of podcasting every weekday. It's in video form as well. If you want to try that, by the way, a sample by video, go to youtube.com/@TheToddHermanShow. youtube.com/@TheToddHermanShow. And this example is, people are aware now that I do this program from my podcast. I talk about the program on the podcast. Many of them have made their way over to AFR. And in making their way over to AFR, they have found a radio home. Because this entire network puts God at the center. This is one of the things that the Wildman family has made certain as they've been allowed to steward this network. And Jonathan and Randy, people who operate behind the scenes, make sure of this. So the scenario is, some people who listen to my podcast, and I have God at the center, but I am not as given to preaching as I am on this program. And they asked me to do more of it on the podcast. We'd like you to get further into the word on the podcast. I'll also tell you this. There are people from AFR in this family who've made their way over to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/@TheToddHermanShow. And you would love to see, I think, the comments as they have introduced biblical wisdom to the YouTube crowd. People who criticize me for my biblical views. They're not mine, they're God's. I was just loving some of the interactions between AFR listeners who've made it over to YouTube and some hardcore YouTubers who've never thought of listening to a so-called religious broadcast. I wanted to thank those people for putting in the time to respond with scripture, but also with thoughtfulness to that YouTube community. The only reason I'm doing that is to reach young people. That's why I even agreed to be on video, was to reach young people. I want to thank you for all those things. Can you believe it's been 10 years since Michael Brown died? It has been 10 years. When you first heard of that, what was the phrase you heard? Was it "hands up, don't shoot" 10 years ago? Remember that? "Hands up, don't shoot." Do you remember how quickly members of Congress on the left had signs that said, hands up, don't shoot? Do you remember how quickly around the country police officers in certain cities took the knee to Michael Brown? Well, they were saying they were taking the knee to something else, but they were taking the knee to Michael Brown. Hands up, don't shoot. Do you remember how quickly this metastasized into the worst riots, broad scale, that we've seen in the United States in decades? Do you remember how quickly we began to see shoot and move tactics within the United States of America? I cannot stress how important it is to understand this. These are drills. These are drills. There'll come a time, unless God decides to stop it, where there won't be drills anymore. What drills do I mean? I mean training people in street combat. I mean making it less scary for people, normalizing street combat. That all came about because they used the death of Michael Brown. The core story here is one so utterly tragic that it will never get a proper airing. A white cop, Darren Wilson, who either days or weeks before had stopped and saved the life of a little infant. That infant happened to be black from black parents. This is not a racist man. He simply asked Michael Brown to stop. Michael Brown had assaulted a man in a store. Michael Brown was a huge young man, physically powerful, huge beyond the size of any normal human. And he simply asked him to stop. Michael Brown didn't want to stop. Darren Wilson was forced to engage. In an argument, Michael Brown reached into Darren Wilson's patrol vehicle and got a hold of his gun. And he fired it. Praise God it didn't kill Darren Wilson. Wilson then bravely acting, I'm sure he was afraid for his life. Michael Brown was huge and aggressive. Got out of his car and pursued Brown, who had walked away. Brown turned to Wilson and began walking towards him, aggressively. Wilson was telling him to get on his knees, put his hands up. He didn't do any of that. Even a grand jury put together by Eric Holder, or an investigation, pardon me, put together by Eric Holder, Barack Obama's attorney general, couldn't come up with a way to charge Darren Wilson. But they did come up with a way to use that. I would suggest to you that there's an entire generation of young people who still to this day believe Michael Brown had his hands up and was murdered by a cop. Post that event, there was a survey done of Democrats who believed that every year 30,000 unarmed black men are shot, murdered by cops, white cops. There's a fascinating statistic in all of this. First of all, it's nowhere near that. It's about 18 people. Unarmed doesn't mean not dangerous, as Michael Brown proved. But there's also this statistic. Between white cops and black cops, guess who's more likely to draw a gun on a black suspect? Right, a black cop. Guess who's more likely to shoot a black suspect? A white cop or a black cop? Right again, black cop. I wonder how many white officers have lost their lives because they wouldn't act upon their training. Michael Brown didn't deserve murder, and he wasn't murdered. Michael Brown didn't commit suicide by cop. Michael Brown was an aggressive young man who had been taught, through modeling perhaps, that physical aggression is the key to getting what you want. And if not through modeling, well, even great parents can have kids go off the range. God is a perfect parent. Adam and Eve went off the range. Incidentally, the name Darren Wilson disappeared. That man was forced to move and mask his identity and not work in law enforcement. That's the price he paid for doing his job. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people like, for instance, Eric Holder, on tall towers of shaking sand with their feature called The Tower of Babel.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
Culture is a reflection of our moment and our time. And present culture is the way we express how we're feeling about the moment.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites in today's Tower of Babbling. It has become more and more clear that Tim Walz, the dictator of the state of Minnesota, some people call governor, is has engaged in stolen valor. And we'll talk about this week. He's not corrected reporters who've called him a combat veteran. He himself has said things like carrying a rifle into war. When you are a politician, you have to make very, very clear that if you served in the armed forces, you need to make very clear whether you were in combat or not. Walz has chosen not to do that. But it's on the topic of abortion we start today in the Tower Babbling. This is Tim Walz bragging about his stance on abortion.
And my record is so pro-choice, Nancy Pelosi asked me if I should tone it down. I stand with Planned Parenthood, and we won!
Nancy Pelosi, who incidentally, a congresswoman once told me that when Nancy Pelosi gets ready to vote for more abortions, she stands in the corner and crosses herself because, you know, she's a very, very strict Catholic. Very strict. Not at all, of course. Crossing herself before voting to take the lives of the innocent. As you treat the least of these, so you treat me, the Lord Jesus said. So Tim Walz, extreme on abortion, of course. Tim Walz, I think, it's been proven that he's engaged in stolen valor. Tim Walz, blind to his stolen valor, does go out and talk about taxing our veterans. He did it this way.
And I was angry in the committee because I had to vote against my own bill, something I fought for 24 years in uniform and 11 years in Congress. I had to vote against my own bill because I'm not going to take money from under wounded warriors to pay for another group of wounded warriors when we were proposing a tax cut for the very rich. So I proposed, and they said, well, can you find the money? I said, sure. How about taxing people who got deferments for Vietnam to pay for those who went?
Well, how about this? How about admitting you quit the National Guard rather than go into combat and then have spent a lifetime saying you went into combat? How about that? And there were people who got deferments because they couldn't fight, and we allow that process. Last clip in today's Tower Babbling. Figurehead Kamala Harris wants a raise. Right now she's a figurehead VP. She wants a raise to figurehead president. She decided to make a promise to the American people, Kamala Harris, whose word is as trustworthy as, well, you would think. It's not trustable at all. This promise may sound familiar, though.
Because when I get to office, we are going to not charge taxes on tips, people making tips.
Eliminate taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers.
Wow. Kamala thought of that on her own. Point of fact, the Biden regime allowed the IRS to create a new method to tax tips. She's talking about solving a problem she helped create, if you believe that Kamala Harris has anything to do with actually running the government. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time. And I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
Thank you, Disciples View. Or I should say, thank you, Disciples View production team, Randy and everybody. Appreciate you. We often wrap up this day with a personal observation from me, and it's just a way of me sharing myself with you outside of the realm of news and commentary, because you're so kind to spend this time with me. I think it's fair trade. You should know something about the rodeo clown who hosts this program. I got an email from a gentleman who wanted to talk with me about something that's uncomfortable, and it has to do with weight loss. Now, this, before you say, wait, oh, hold on. This isn't going to be a health rant. It's not going to be a CrossFit rant. It's simply going to be responding to a question that a brother had. Chris, does Disciples View have an AFR email address? The easiest way to reach me is go to thetoddhermanshow.com. There is an email submission form there. I see all those emails. I do my best to respond. If you write me a long email, I promise I read these all. Long emails to me require the respect of a long response. So I often do that on the air. All I wanted to ask was this. He said in passing he was once morbidly obese and had gone on a journey to lose weight and now exercises fervently. I wanted to know if this was a spiritual as well as physical journey, and if so, could he speak more about it? Yeah, I mean, Chris, it didn't start as a spiritual journey or anything like that. I mean, it wasn't ungodly at all. It started because I saw myself on video, and I didn't recognize myself. This was 20 years ago. I mean, longer than that. It was probably 23 years ago. And I saw myself on TV. I was raising money for my startup, and this PR firm let this news agency go around the country with us. And I was being filmed getting out of a car in San Francisco, and I was watching this with my PR team. And I said, "Who is that?" And the PR lady, the head lady, said, "That's you." I said, "Dear God." That was it, my exact word, "Dear God." And I decided to change at that point. And the process of getting there was hard work. I mean, I lost, I weigh today 209 pounds. At one point, I weighed nearly 400, about 380 pounds. At that time, I was lifting a lot of weights and I was strong, but who cares? I was really, really unhealthy. This has become spiritual for me, but I will tell you something else. The spiritual portion of this is I have recognized that God has given me a love of hard physical work in the form of exercise. He's given it to me as something that serves me so that I can serve others. There's something about this that didn't make any sense to me until I understood that God wanted me to work with young men. When I've been working with young men, one bridge to most of them is the fact that I can do things they can't do. Even some of the high school boys. Now, there's things they can do that I can't. They're 18. They're in physical prime. But this is a bridgeway to these kids that, hey, Todd is relatable because Todd will go climb ropes with us, or Todd will run with us, or Todd will even play football with us. So God showed that to me. You have this love. Here's a way I'd like you to steward it. But I'll also tell you this. Man, sometimes I really worry about becoming prideful. I really do. Because working to improve the flesh, wow, that's working in the flesh. Chris, thanks for the note. Thanks for listening to AFR. In the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak His Word. We walk in the path of Jesus to make disciples of all nations until God decides we can speak again together. May His peace wash over you. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This is Ben, a Disciples View. Do you